Just Johnny's getting a lot of support too off the temper text for his views this morning about the punishment. Fans out there agree. They say, why should the fan be punished and the player not allowed to play because they get the penalty, the fan themselves, because they don't get one of their better players out there, when the fine or the penalty should go all to the player and should hit them in the hip pocket?
Well, unless club, and this is the problem, clubs are only allowed to fine up to a maximum of, I think, 5,000. So that's not going to really hurt. That won't be severe enough penalty for the player. So they go, okay, if you're not going to let me fine him 50 grand or 30 grand or whatever you think it is, the thing that does hurt them is when they don't play. So I know it upsets the fan and it disappoints everyone, but you got to hit, you got to be able to punish the player somehow. And financially, you're a bit hampered.
That is BS, though, isn't it? Like, if you want to fine your player, whatever you want to fine your player, you should be able to fine your player that much money based upon whatever the indiscretion might be. Anyway,
more than what they can, I would suggest.
Exactly. I just want to play some of what Max Gawn had to say. There's a couple of questions I want to ask you about Melbourne and the way they've handled all this. But this, I thought Max Gawn showed a great leadership yesterday when he faced the media. This is part of what he had to say about what has taken place and how he felt.
Yeah, it was flattening. When I got the call from Melky, which is, again, another show of where we've come from. I was able to get well informed pretty early on what happened, and I'm not going to lie, I've been embarrassed the last 2 days.
There you go. So he's been embarrassed the last couple of days, and he was asked whether or not the club deliberately tried to sweep stuff under the rug, that type of thing. Now that we know a whole lot more now, and one of the other things that we know also is that Jake Melksham didn't get fined. Because when they talked to the players about what had taken place, it was discovered that he was actually defending the other players too around the accusations and the commentary that Stephen May was providing, right? My point to you, though, is what's a club, what's Melbourne learnt out of all this, or what have other AFL clubs learnt about this and the way that this has all played out, that if they found themselves in a similar position, they should adopt? That Melbourne maybe didn't adopt.
Well, the thing I would have done far more promptly was to get to the restaurant, not to try and cover stuff over or hide anything, but just absolutely get there and express your dismay and apologise far more promptly and in a more heartfelt manner. That's one of the first things I do. The other things are, whisper these, you can't hide anything. Get it out. Just throw, and whether or not they were still accumulating information, downplaying it, well, he punched a bloke in the head, so he can't downplay it. And then turns out he has to go to hospital. So as I had a conversation on Monday when I first found out, and you just go, well, it'll all come out. So there's no good trying to sit on anything. It will all come out eventually. I mean, the narrative yesterday, all day yesterday, was that Stephen May, it was quoted as fact, but we quoted it, said to Jake Melksham, we would have lost the premiership if you had played. So we discussed that for a day, and that's wrong. So, I mean, from that point of view, just get out, tell us what happened, and then get on with it. So I thought Max was great as well. He stood up, said what he said. Of course he'd be embarrassed and disappointed. We know what he stands for. And now, wheels fall off, whatever. All these questions that get asked, as I said yesterday, are legitimate because you bring it on yourselves as Melbourne supporters have said to me, what are they talking about? We're on top of the ladder. We've won 10 in a row. Doesn't matter. Because now it'll be, okay, what happens from here? All right? The 10 and 2 start gets put into perspective. That's good. But right now you've lost 2 in a row. You've had a blue in a public, you've embarrassed the whole joint. Let's see what happens from here.
Okay, Stephen May, it appears now that he has some ground to make up. So at one point I thought, okay, he had just had a verbal altercation maybe with Jake Melksham. Now, it appears that it's much broader than that and it was around the other players that might have been there. He's got some ground to make up. How serious do you think that is internally in the Melbourne Football Club? And how would you go about repairing? Let's say that there's distrust now between players and maybe they're looking at him in a way that they hadn't previously. So he's got some ground to make up in their eyes. How would you deal with this if you were the coach, Simon Goodwin, or others at the Melbourne Football Club now?
Well, I would imagine it's all happened. but you thrash it out internally. You thrash it out, Stephen May. You put him up there, put him on the spot. You're honest with him. You're honest with the way you feel. You're honest with the fact that you've let us down, embarrassed us, put us in this situation where we've got to, you know, deal with all this distraction, and then let him have his say. But then you say, okay, well, that's all good and well, but your actions, it's about your actions. And look, some players will, you know, will Stephen May not muck up again in his career? Don't know. History would suggest that you couldn't say that. But
he probably will.
Yeah, but you weigh it up on the surface of what you've given to a club, not only from a playing point of view, but I've heard enough and know enough that he's also contributed in a really positive way, but he lets himself down every now and then, and that's not good enough, and it would appear that alcohol might have a bit to do with it, so maybe he's got to make some sort of commitment to the rest of the team about, you know, when he drinks and or whether he drinks at all. So that it's all in your actions, Tim. You know everything. You know, when you muck up, you muck up, and you say, "Oh, yeah, I'm sorry." Da 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 da, and you accept that, but then you go, "Righto, let me see it. Let's see what happens from here." So Jordan, that's what I said with it.
Jordan Lewis had this to say on 360 last night too, which is a really interesting take on the divide that can occur within a dressing room after a premiership win.
As soon as you win a premiership, there is an automatic divide within the football club. And that's there whether you like it or not. It's felt, it's rarely spoken about, and on this occasion, it seems to be that was
got spoken
that was
about.
Part of the banter, which being involved in a club and being one of those players that was lucky enough to have success, it would have been a line that I would never have said to another teammate. So that's going to be pretty tough for Maisie to get over.
Of all this, the different conversations that I had, that's the one that pricked my ears. Now, I clearly have been in no position to talk about that, so I want to ask you about it. Is there an instant divide? And is he sort of saying, well, there are those that have and those that haven't, and then those that haven't, just by virtue of the fact that they don't have a medallion, therefore there's a divide, and the sensitivity to not having one then becomes heightened. So if that's what Stephen May alluded to, you know, to Joel Smith about playing and not playing, and blah blah blah, is that could you relate to what Jordan
100%
Lewis was saying?
100% there is, and it's not. Look, and he is absolutely right about the sensitivity around this, because everybody is there for the same reason. Yeah. Everybody wants to play in that premiership team, that successful premiership team. Unfortunately, not everybody can, and a lot of players that miss out believe that they should have been given the opportunity to play in that. So you are sensitive to the fact that they didn't get the opportunity to play.
Right.
And
so,
it's not something that you would ever, like you would never, ever, in a lighthearted way or other way, throw that back at somebody.
Yeah. See, that's interesting. So then, therefore, Joel Smith's one of those, and then Jake Melksham's one of those.
Mm-hmm.
So then they would be particularly sensitive if there's any discussion about those that haven't, those that haven't played. And Jake and could be part of the motivation, you know, again, as I've read and heard, that Jake stood up and said, right, enough's enough, and, you know, pull your head in. But it would be heightened by the fact that if that was the tone and the nature of it, then he was part of the have-nots.
Yes, and I would say that if this is the thing, like I would like to know exactly what the conversation was, so that you and I are having a conversation now and we know exactly what it was that was spoken about and the sensitivity around that, which was the result of that became a physical clash between two teammates. But there's a great sensitivity around that. And that shows to me a lack of maturity from Stephen May, even though he may have been fueled by alcohol or whatever.
Yeah.
You can't use that as an excuse. The fact is that is a complete lack of empathy for his teammates as well and maturity.
Yes, I agree with you. And there's a message here. So what the hell did he say? Tell us. Well, I don't know. So, and this is the point, right? This is my point about yesterday. It was reported as fact that this is, I mean, it's no good us, unless you know 100%. Well, I don't know what it was. Yesterday we said that it was he said to Jake Melksham, we would have lost if you played in a grand final. And we were all horrified by that. And now
there's a denial around that.
Well, Max,
but I think the discussion may have centered around this.
In response to this person saying, well, tell us what it is, you're hiding something. No, I'm not hiding something. I don't know what was said. And given the example of yesterday, there's no good speculating, because you can be 100% wrong. But I think it's fair to say it is around this issue of those that have played and those that haven't.
The other story that we've seen up there at Doomben this morning is Anna Visto heading towards the Tats Tiara.
That James Orman was good enough to ride her for us.
and her last bit was good. So I think it's a good plan. And that mare, she goes good in the 1400-metre race with a bit of freshness to her. So I think it's a good plan.
I thought that was Wisp. I thought that was you was doing that? Your trainer's report. That's Mick Price talking about the horse that you got no ownership in, but you think you do own, Ana Visto.
Ana Visto, that's right. That's well, that's his report on Ana Visto. Here's my report on Gary's performance this week.
Hi, Wispy Watson here from Wispy's Thoroughbred Lodge to the Stars. Gary, you're right back after a torrid long weekend, watched the D's Saturday night, had to shift five times during the game until he found supporters who recognised him. His little show rated its backside off again, despite Fifey not being able to get the fire started. Gary said he had his head up his bum, all good. Got his car back from the panel shop, squared excess off with a nice little ramble message. Did a nice little earner too for temper, had no trouble at all putting head down on the pillow despite cutting Wisp out of the deal again. All good. His 5-4-3 defensive setup, the talk of the round ball world. Had long room tickets too for Kenny Saturday night at the G. Kenny, a no show. Still work to do there. Anyway, thank you.
You've had a good week.
That could be your best one. That's the one that... Forgive us that 2 minutes, everyone. That's just a little laugh between Tim and I. And if you happen to laugh along with us, that's great.
And if you listen to our show each and every day, you'll know what most of those references are.
And your the reference to Kenny is Kenny Williams, who I...
who you put in a grave, yeah.
...declared had left us, who's still very much alive and well and...
And hasn't forgiven you, nor has his family forgiven you either.
Square that away just yet.
I may have understated how many times you had to shift on Saturday night before you found a Melbourne fan that recognised you too.
Hey, welcome back. The Wisp's in rare form. His trainer's report's been very well received this morning. His best ever work, that's what's coming through on the temper text machine. Now he needs his footy club to hit their best ever form for season 2022. It's been a tough year, and it is a year that is full of, I would imagine, celebrations that have been planned for a long, long time, given it's their 150th year. And the big, big night is tomorrow night at the MCG. Xavier Campbell, the CEO of the Bombers, joins us. Xavier, welcome.
Good morning, Garrett. Good morning, Tim.
Nice to talk to you. I would imagine that when you penciled this game in and requested it from the AFL, that you're hoping that this would have been maybe a battle for a top four spot. So on-field hasn't quite worked out the way you would have liked, but it shouldn't hold back from what's going to be a big occasion tomorrow night.
No, that's fair. I mean, it has been a challenge of the year in terms of the year, and we haven't quite reached the heights that we wanted to reach, and more the consistency, really. There's no doubt about that. We sort of started to see that in the back half of last year, and we've spoken about that at nauseam the last couple of weeks. But with respect to tomorrow night, I mean, the 150th game, I mean, it's a great opportunity to reflect on the past and the history and the success and the people. And, you know, I guess, you know, from my perspective, I was an Essendon fan. I've been an Essendon fan my entire life. And, you know, to bring so many of those people together over this weekend, and obviously, yes, just the activities started, you know, back half of last year when we ran the documentary series around the history of the football club and its people and everything else like that. But tomorrow night will be a fantastic night. There's a pre-game ceremony piece, which will be, you know, you don't want to miss it. If you're an Essendon fan, you certainly don't want to miss it. It's going to be special. It's going to involve a whole lot of past legends of the football club reflecting on some great moments. You've got a big past player event tomorrow night with about 200 people in the room, and then you've got the gala dinner on Saturday night. So there's a lot to look forward to this weekend and reflect on the history of the Essendon Football Club.
Xavier, how difficult has it been to pull all that together?
It's a lot of work, Tim, because it's obviously incremental. And we've got a great team in Essendon. Ryan Larkin has led an enormous amount of that, and he'd only recently joined the club in the last year. And he's, you know, I think you'll see the fruits of his labour will be tomorrow night, and he and his team tomorrow night in the pre-game ceremony, which will be, you know, I think it'll be very unique. It'll be something that not many people have seen at AFL football. And clearly just getting everyone together. It's, you know, you're trying to coordinate such a big group of people from, you know, we're talking 150 years of history. Like, there's sort of not many sporting clubs in the world have that sort of heritage. So you're trying to capture the moments, you're trying to get fans involved, the members involved in recognising those moments, and you're trying to get as many past players involved as you can, and clearly they're sprawled across the entire country on the weekend, so you're trying to bring them all in the town. So it is a lot of work, but yeah, we've got a passionate group at Essendon, and we've always worked really hard to keep a strong connection with our past players and our roots and our history and our heritage, and that sort of stuff has probably held us in good stead ahead of tomorrow night and helping with the coordination of everything.
There's a big dinner on Saturday night. How many past players will be in attendance?
Yeah, I think we're about 150 odd, Tim, in terms of, it might be even more now with partners, those sorts of things. I reckon we'd be up to well over 200 now in terms of past players, and then obviously with officials and other stakeholders, we'll be nearly 1,000 people on Saturday night. It's going to be a, you know, it's going to be a great night. There's a lot of stuff that you know about. There's a lot of stuff probably that you don't know about that's going to come about on the night, and recognition of some of the people being involved and the teams that are being involved over the years. So it's going to be a great night for the football club, no doubt about that.
A couple of little surprises in there for the Wisp, is there, on Friday night and Saturday night? Is that what you're saying, Tony?
There might be a couple, Tim.
How do you cast aside or not cast aside? It's been a difficult time for Essendon this year, and in particular the last couple of weeks, and there was, to some people, there was a confusion about whether or not there was a review going on. There wasn't a review going on. At one stage, Paul Brasher said that there wasn't, and then he announced to the members that there was. The fallout from that, where are we at right now? Has that actually started? Has that begun? It was announced that it was going to be internal, and you're going to have Sean Wellman, you're going to have Kevin Sheedy, and you're going to have Simon Madden. What part or what stage of this internal review are they at right now?
Yeah, no, that's all fair, Tim. I mean, I could sit here and worry about the little details of what I say to you. All I'd say is this: like, we're a team that hasn't performed at the level that we wanted to. And yeah, I thought you saw some really good signs last year of our group. I think you saw it from consistency, and there was clear game style, everything else that we were trying to deliver. You saw that in development. We haven't quite got there this year. And there's no doubt there's been some contributing factors to that. And it's probably personnel and continuity. And, you know, it has been a tough fixture, all those things. But they're not justifications for where we sit. And, you know, I would say you can call it whatever you want. It's a sharper focus on driving improvement quickly. And I think Paul has been very clear, and there's been real consistency from the people that have spoken on behalf of the football club around the belief in the plan and the people. But what we want to do is ensure they're absolutely best resourced and supported to improve, to drive that improvement. And I think that's where it's a little bit different. There are a whole range of different sort of connotations when it comes to the word review that can be frustrating. And there are the extreme examples of some that some clubs have done in the past, and there are the more subtle examples, and we are certainly the latter.
And what about your own situation, Xavier? You got reappointed recently, and you know, I'm sure you would have heard some of the frustrations out there from Essendon fans saying, why aren't you being reviewed or aren't part of this process? So if you were to sit back and have a look at your own time there, how have you seen it?
Yeah, and that's all fair, Gaz. We're a wins and loss business. You know, it's always uncomfortable when you're sitting there talking about yourself or trying to justify your position or anything else like that. I mean, the reality is the people best placed to do that are the board. And, you know, their last 6 months will have been about assessing me, and Paul has spoken to that, and, you know, I have been reviewed. That's essentially the process that boards put in place when they look to reappoint or recontract senior people in the football club. I guess from my perspective, you know, I wouldn't say it's been linear. I wouldn't say it's been straightforward in my 8 years as CEO. The first four or five is clearly was managing something pretty extraordinary, and it was it was very, very difficult. And then, you know, the focus on football has been, although it's been constant right throughout, it's certainly been sharper in this last sort of 4 years as we've moved past different issues that we've had in the past. And I think probably at the end of 2020, if I looked at the team that we had there and the list demographic and profile, it shifted markedly. And we've embraced being younger and investing in the draft and investing in youth. And that's where we sit right now. And, you know, we've been the second or youngest team least experienced team every week this year. But we believe we've got a great nucleus there. Like no one listening is saying we don't believe in the plan we've got. We believe in the plan. We believe in the people. But we just need to enhance, invest in it, and add further to it. And we will certainly be busy in this off season.
So unwavering support for your senior coach.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. I think Ben, you know, it was pretty hot in the kitchen when Ben came into the role at the end of 2020, and it was pretty unique. And you probably. You know, we saw that other clubs probably experienced the same. You know, we were in the hub with Goody in Melbourne, and it was intense for them as well. And you know, Ben walked into a role in 2021 with probably expectations weren't as high. We obviously brought in a hell of a lot of young players and top 10 picks with Reid, Cox and Perkins. And I think Ben has proven that he can build that connection amongst the group, and I think he's proven he can get that game style at a level. But he's also, you know, this year we haven't quite got to that point, and Ben will be the first to acknowledge that we haven't got to that point. And part of that, as I said, is they've been contributing factors, and it's not to make excuses or justifications. I'm not saying that at all, but they have been contributing factors. We believe Ben is absolutely the right person, though. I hear that from the players. I know that from the staff. I see it every day. But he's a younger coach, and we've got to make sure he gets the best experience and best support. Sorry, he wouldn't be the first coach in the competition to get more support at different times.
Sorry, Xavier Campbell, SNCO, joining us now. Would you agree, though, that right now this team, this club, lacks an identity in terms of the way that it plays?
I think we're starting to re-establish that. Tim, I would say up to a couple of weeks ago, yeah, particularly when you consider where we got to last week. I mean, we've spoken about being a hard-working, disciplined, dependable team. We want to be a blue-collar team. We want to reflect the great Essendon teams of the past. And I don't think many people would argue that we had made really strong progress in that last year. And I think behind closed doors, we have absolutely made progress at last year and even this year as a football club. But there's no doubt that we shifted away from that at different times this year, and we want to get we want to get back to being that high pressure team. And Ben talks about we want to hot the opposition, we want to be a contested ball team, and you certainly started to see it in the last couple of games, no doubt about that.
Xavier, it's going to be massive tomorrow night. What time will people need to be in their seats to make sure that they? And I don't know if the Wisp's got a role at all. There'll be a garritorial if he doesn't. So, what time does everyone got to be in their seats by on Friday night?
Well, it's hard to do anything special at Essendon, Gaz, without Tim involved, isn't it? So,
yeah, that's why
you're not, you know, and it's almost demanded. It's part of his post football contract with the club.
Yes,
there will be an event down at Fed Square tomorrow afternoon from sort of 4 p.m. There'll be a whole lot of past players down there. Tim is not one of them, but you'll be the Sheeds will be down there as coach. You know, you've got Terry, you've got a whole range of past players will be down there. Some premiership cups will be down there. So I encourage all the Bomber faithful to get down there. There'll be a walk to the MCG, and then I really do encourage everyone to be in their seats by about 7:15 tomorrow night. There is 13 or 14 past players, including Tim, and some other special past players that haven't been involved as much over the years that will be involved in a pre-game ceremony that is, you know, I just can't wait. I'm incredibly excited about. So I encourage you to get down there, get early. And for all the Essendon people, we haven't got to the level we want yet. We're a big club. We're a great club. We're striving. And tomorrow night will be a great reflection of that.
Yes,
well,
just make sure if there's any spotlights involved. Is it okay if Gary gets there early just to check the wattage on the globes before all that gets activated, Xavier?
We can make sure that happens, Tim.
I'll be shooting the Wisp from low up. I don't want to get onto that dome of his up on top. good luck. Difficult year. I know it's a challenging year, but it isn't. It's not a time for reflection on where they're at right now for tomorrow night. Anyway, it's a time of celebration and. Hopefully for Essendon fans, they can get a result. Carlton will be doing everything they can, of course, not to, but it's going to be a great night. So thanks for giving us some time.
No worries. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, David.
David Campbell, Essendon CEO. Michael Klein, the greatest photographer in the world, has texted me to ask you, Wisp, if you can get down to Windy Hill for his pick at 11, because he's running out of the numbers are falling. Any chance?
What's happened?
Kleiny, the greatest photographer in the world, is doing a picture at Windy Hill today. Yep. He wants to know if you can get down there at 11.
No, I can't. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I asked for you.
That's an unconventional way to be approached to do something. I must say.
Well,
via a text message via you on radio, live on radio. No, I can't. I can't. I'm busy.
The German beach is a wood.
I'm busy with the grandkids up on the roof trying to clean out the gutters.
The beach is wood, Tim, not the beach.
Ah, right.
As is a beach in Germany.
I thought that was a strange way to be smoking the ham, the grandmother's
and
ham.
How good was it to hear from Attila the Ham? That came through the text. Righto, overreaction of the week. Away you go.
Okay, here we go. Kingy gets a nomination each and every week. His seedings each week with Jared, a fantastic listing. And he's gone cold on Melbourne after their last two losses.
I got the Demons at three.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no, you can't lose the way they've lost the last 2 weeks. And the alarm bells have started. Now, they can gather again. They're still top of the table.
Who have you got at one?
The boys in purple.
You really have made good.
Gee, Kingy, I heard him. I listened to him and Jared on his seedings all the time. He said he was never going to change the seedings of the Demons 1 and Brisbane 2. So
you were saying that's an overreaction after two losses?
Well, it is.
And that was before all the kerfuffle early in the week, too.
Yeah, given the position he had taken. You have him at eight after the punch on at the restaurant.
I've got him in the bottom eight. We know the state of origin is a big deal. It's a huge deal up there in New South Wales. In fact, quite across the country. But have they overstated it here? Have a listen.
This is the biggest 40 seconds of their season so far. The 13 players out there right now could possibly be biggest 43 seconds of their life.
Overreaction or not?
I don't think so. I think that's where they see state of origin and how they view it up there in Sydney.
Well, we've already played this once this week. We had a bit of a laugh during the week. Christian Petrarca took an aim. He's on Kiss FM at time slots weather and then says the supporter base is old as well.
Well, we need a crowd first to actually get ourselves going. No one comes. When you come out there and you only see really 30,000 there, it's pretty
cool. Why are numbers down?
Well, it's Saturday, Arvo, Saturday night. We played 4:30 last week against Freo, and that's not a great time for a Saturday night game.
Yeah.
And then Saturday night, 7:20 is not... It's just too cold at the moment. I don't think people will come. And I find our age demographic for our fans is still quite older.
Well, did he know that he was on air when he was talking?
I don't think they told him. Time slots, weather, and then age demographic. I'm not sure.
He smashed everybody.
I love everything that Petrarch does, but except that one wasn't up there. Yep.
Yeah, he's no longer in charge of marketing the Melbourne game. Stephen A. Smith features every week. Here's this week's nomination.
The definition of insanity is not doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. The definition of insanity is making a long-term commitment to Kyrie Irving. He's made not showing up to work into an art form. Magicians don't disappear as well as this dude.
Is that, I don't know enough about, is that an overreaction? Kyrie doesn't deserve a long term?
I'm not sure. That may not be an overreaction. This could be a bit of a stretch from Channel 10's Peter Van Osselen. He's comparing
Onselen,
ScoMo's delay in leading Kirribilli House to pretty much every error that he's ever made when he was PM. Have a listen.
And Scott Morrison, he's basically squatting at Kirribilli House at this particular point in time. It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, at the end of the day, he was slow on the vaccine rollout. He was slow to get back to Australia in the wake of Hawaii and the bushfires. And off the back of all of that, slow with the rats as well. It turns out, guess what? He's slow to get out of Kirribilli House as well.
He might have been having trouble sticky taping all those boxes together.
He's a squatter. A bit of an overreaction there, Peter Van Osselen.
And our final one from your mate, Damien Barrett. Bailey Smith got 2 weeks for his headbutt on Zach Tui. This is Damo taking, he thought that the suspension may not have been big enough.
To me, the act of headbutting, I feel there's a loading on the actual act itself. And look,
yeah, I know a headbutt is ugly, but it's still got to be a severe offence to get four. But are you saying
I think it should
wasn't
have been
enough?
Four,
yeah, four weeks.
Not for a headbutt. 4 weeks is fair enough for a headbutt, but that was at the lower end of the headbutt.
Yeah. That wasn't a Zinedine Zidane type headbutt to the chest, was it?
So who gets the cob?
Well,
I think Petrarca.
I think Petrarca has to get the cob.
Yeah, he gets the cob this week for saying that Saturday afternoon slot's no good, Saturday night's no good, the weather was cold, and the supporters aren't a little bit old. All right, it's coming your way, Christian. Let's hope that's the last drama for Melbourne this week after a drama-filled week.